Enterprise. Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Keith Ferrell. I can see for miles and
miles and miles. Hello, everyone. It's very nice to have you with us for another edition of the program. Today, we're going to be putting the spotlight on a radio station that has a bit of a mystery surrounding it. It was very well listened to, the area that it was targeting. In fact, they even made a movie about a well-known announcer at this station. Now, let's see if you can guess what station it is by listening to this little compilation of jingles. A-F-B-N Music Ball!
And now we'll take a look at some temperature readings from stateside. The highest today was 112 in Blythe, California, the low 42 at Steamboat Springs, Colorado.
Bismarck, 90 degrees, clear skies.
Boston had 86 and cloudy.
Buffalo, 87.
Charleston, North Carolina, 78 degrees.
The Windy City, 89 degrees, partly cloudy.
Cincinnati had 89 and cloudy skies.
Cleveland, 90 with clear skies.
Denver, 89 and partly cloudy.
Des Moines, 75 degrees.
Detroit, 89 and clear skies.
Fort Worth, 83 degrees and clear skies.
Indianapolis, 89 and partly cloudy. And those are some temperatures, the weekend weather conditions from the world.
From Saigon, this is the American Forces Vietnam Network. Presenting Million Dollar Music for the Aquarian Age.
From Saigon, Channel 54 AM, 99.9 FM.
Well, if you guessed that the movie was Good Morning Vietnam, you're correct. And of course, the announcer that was featured in that movie was Adrian Cronauer, played by Robin Williams. The station, of course, is Armed Forces Vietnam Network. Now, the station was on the air from the early 60s until the end of the Vietnam War. There are people around the world that were even able to pick up its medium wave signal when their local medium wave stations went off the air. Well, radio station WEBY in the U.S. state of Florida is preparing a 10-hour documentary on Armed Forces Vietnam Network. And I have to say, it's something that I'm really looking forward to listening to. So excited, in fact, that I decided to call Mike Bates, who's one of the people behind the show. And we spoke about AFVN and where the idea all came about.
From Saigon, this is the American Forces Vietnam Network, presenting Million Dollar Music for the Aquarian Age.
Why did you decide to do this? Is it because the Armed Forces Vietnam Network is so well known?
Well, it's actually even more innocuous than that. I have a friend who lives here in Pensacola who served in the United States Marine Corps in Vietnam, and his job there was chief engineer of the radio station in Saigon, and he also did a radio program in the evening called the Go Show out of Saigon, and then he extended his tour and did some time in Da Nang as well, doing a radio show there. So he has all these tapes that he made, and he asked me one time, "Hey, Mike, would you like to hear my tapes?" I knew that he worked at the station, but I never listened to his material, and he asked me if I'd like to hear him, and I said, "Yeah, sure, I'd love to," and it was pure curiosity. I just wanted to know what my friend sounded like 50 years ago, and that was it. But the more I heard of these tapes, the more I realized there's some pretty significant historical value to these. This is something that people need to know existed. And so he and I got to talking and decided to co-produce this documentary where we would feature his and other recordings that he made from 1968 and 1969 in Vietnam.
You know what's actually interesting is a lot of people may think that the Armed Forces Network was really just for U.S. troops. But I know in Vietnam, speaking to people who were in Vietnam at the time, Vietnamese, they said actually they would also tune into the station as well. It was a rather broad audience.
Very much so. It was the source of American music, which a lot of South Vietnamese really enjoyed. And it was also the place where you could hear them speaking English. So as South Vietnamese were wanting to learn English, well, one of the good ways to do that is to immerse yourself in it. And listening to English on the radio is very helpful in developing that ear to understand the language.
When did the station go on the air? Was it right at the onset of the war or was it after?
It went on the air in 1962. Started out in the Rex Hotel, and then it moved to the Brink Hotel, but there was a bombing that destroyed the station, and they rebuilt it a few blocks from the embassy, and had their own facility, and television was added as well, all under one roof at that time.
Now, the broadcasters that worked at the Armed Forces Vietnam Network, were they all U.S. military personnel, or did they also bring in commercial broadcasters from the U.S.?
The engineers were South Vietnamese engineers, technicians, if you will, who were very helpful in keeping the station running. But the station and the facilities were run by the U.S. military. The chief engineers and the official engineers were military. The newsmen were military. The announcers were military. The DJs were military. So there was plenty of assistance from South Vietnamese personnel, but the stations were run by the United States military, and it was servicemen that did the primary job at all these stations. And it wasn't just Saigon. There were as many as 8 affiliates throughout South Vietnam that carried the program that originated out of Saigon, plus some of them had their own locally originated program that they do for, you know, a handful of hours per day. But that's not to say that there were no well-known commercial voices on the program, because there were shows produced for Armed Forces Radio Television Service that were sent to Saigon and played. And the most memorable of those, at least from Vietnam, would be Chris Noel's program called A Date with Chris. And that was sent to Saigon and played throughout the entire network, and she was immensely popular among the servicemen in Vietnam.
So if you look at, let's say, the schedule from that time on the station, what did it just represent, let's say, the average commercial radio station in the U.S., or was it something different?
It was different in that it tried to be all things to all people, in that in America, if you want a rock and roll station, you want to listen to rock and roll, you tune in the rock and roll station, and it doesn't matter what time of day it is, they're playing rock and roll. Well, AFVN had block programming where they'd play rock and roll for a handful of hours, and then they'd play country for a handful of hours, and then they'd play soul for a handful of hours, and then they'd do an interview program. So it was more block programming, and depending on the time of day, depended on what you heard.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose, of course, news was also an important source to the station as well.
News was at the top of every hour, 24 hours a day, yes, a 5-minute newscast. Mm-hmm.
And was that newscast prepared by the U.S. military, or was that using civilian sources?
It was using both commercial and military sources, but the announcements, the actual newscast, was delivered by military personnel. Now, they would occasionally have a report from CBS or NBC or whoever, where you'd have one of those network reporters doing a story. But the 5-minute newscast was delivered by U.S. military personnel.
You know, I bring up that question because it was a very, of course, difficult time, the Vietnam War. Was there any type of, let's say, censorship on content that would go out, not just with news, but also with, say, music programming?
Well, that's an interesting question, because we asked several newsmen that worked at AFVN back then, was their news censored? And some said no, and some said yes. But even the guy who said no said, you know, we towed the company line, and I've been in the military long enough as a military journalist, I know what the company line is. So clearly you couldn't give out anything that was going to compromise operational security. You couldn't deliver bad information that was going to destroy the morale of the troops in South Vietnam. But the protests back in the States, that was being reported. The burning of draft board records, that was being reported. So it depends on what you mean by censorship. I mean, it wasn't a free-for-all, but it wasn't so tightly controlled that it was only the official rah-rah party line of those in favor of the war.
Right. And what about, for example, with music? I mean, if there were musicians, let's say, that were very anti-war, I mean, would their music get played at all?
The songs had to be provided to the radio station from the Armed Forces Radio Television Service. Any song that AFRTS provided could be played by anybody at the station. So in that sense, you could play anything you wanted. There was no list of prohibited songs, but there were songs that AFRTS didn't send. And most notable among them is the Rolling Stones Satisfaction. And that wasn't even an anti-war song.
Mm-hmm.
But it was believed that there was a sexual innuendo, and it was not allowed on the radio. But it did actually get played one time in a countdown show, and the person who played it got in trouble for it. And he tells that story in this documentary that's going to air on WEBY.
Just recently on a flight to Europe, in the in-flight entertainment, they actually had the movie Good Morning Vietnam, which I'd seen before, and I watched it again. You know, the movie is quite interesting to watch. I mean, yes, there's some factual points to it. Of course, there's some fictional points that were added to the film as well. And one point of the film, they talk about the programming at the Armed Forces Vietnam Network, where the programmer in the movie says, yes, you can play Ray Conniff. I mean, is that really true, or is that just kind of made up for the movie, to play, like, easy listening type music?
Well, we interviewed Adrian Cronauer as part of this documentary, and his interview will air on the first day of the program, which is going to be Monday, October 26th. And he said that the movie was 99% fiction, that if he would have done half the things Robin Williams portrayed him as doing, he'd still be at Leavenworth Prison. So it was very much fictionalized.
So they didn't just fill their schedule with Ray Conniff selections, didn't they?
There were program directors who determine what was played. So clearly, if you're playing the Go Show, for example, you're playing a rock and roll show, you're not going to put on Merle Haggard. And if you're playing the Town and Country Show, you're not going to be expected to put on the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
So there was programming in that sense. But within the format, the DJs had pretty decent autonomy in picking the songs that they wanted to play. In fact, many of the shows were request shows. People would either call in with a request or write in with a request, and oftentimes those were accompanied by dedications. I would like to dedicate this to my wife back home in Portland, Oregon, or something like that. And that love song would be played. Now, of course, the wife in Portland didn't hear it, but the GI in South Vietnam did, and it meant something.
Let's talk about some of the funny stories that I can just sort of picture at what happened there. It must have been, you know, when I listen to some of the tapes from the Armed Forces Vietnam Network, I sort of get this impression that it was complete chaos.
Well, I didn't get that idea from it at all. There was structure to it, and the goal of AFVN was to make what came out of the radio sound like a real quality radio station from back in the States. They tried to bring the sound of home to GIs who were thousands of miles from home, that they could turn on the radio and hear their favorite song. They could turn on the radio and hear humor. They could turn on the radio and hear a dedication. They could hear news. They could get this sense of normalcy in a very abnormal, insane environment of war.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I think they did a really good job of achieving that objective, and about half the interviews that are conducted in this documentary are with personnel who produced it. The other half, though, are with servicemen who listened to it, and every one of them tells stories about what AFVN meant to them at the time. So there were roughly 1,000 people that served at AFVN during the war, and they really did meet that objective of trying to bring normalcy to the troops, the sound of home.
There must, of course, have been some very interesting stories that you came across that were quite surprising when you were preparing this.
Well, one of the more interesting stories was told by Pat Sajak. Now, Pat Sajak hosts a game show here in the States called Wheel of Fortune. He's very well known for that. What he's less well known for is that in 1968 and 69, he was a DJ in Saigon with AFVN.
This is the American Forces Vietnam Network.
Good morning, Vietnam.
Good morning. Good morning. What's wrong with you? By thinking, you're thinking a thought or two.
Welcome to a Dawnbuster for a Monday morning, December 9th. I'm Army Specialist Pat Sajak.
The sun's out, it's fun's out, let's stop the day.
We've got lots of good music for you today as we start another brand new week here on a Dawnbuster, so let's not waste any time. number 10 this week. It's up from number 12 last week on the AFN All-New Stateside Survey. It's Dionne Warwick here. Promises,
promises, I'm up. He did the Dawn Buster show. This is the famous Good Morning Vietnam program that Adrian Cronauer is best known for doing, but Pat Sajak hosted that. Well, he told the story of one day when President Richard Nixon was delivering his first Christmas address to the nation as president. It was December of 1969. And Pat's instructions were, when the president comes on, break away from your music and put on the president. When the president's done, go back to your music. So Pat did that. He was monitoring the CBS feed, and when the CBS announcer said the president was coming, Pat turned off his microphone, introduced the president of the United States, and threw the switch to bring the CBS audio onto the air throughout all of South Vietnam on every AFN station in the country. And the president delivered his standard, you know, peace, goodwill to men, standard Christmas remarks. And then he stopped talking. And so Pat Sajak turned the feed off, opened up his microphone, announced a song, and hit the turntable, and there comes the music. But then he was curious what the CBS commentators were saying about what Richard Nixon had just said. So he put the earphone from the CBS feed to his ear, and he hears Richard Nixon's voice saying, and now a special message for the Americans serving in Vietnam. And Pat tells the story. He's like, oh no, what do I do? And he says he's got the good devil on, or the good angel on one shoulder telling him to put the president on, and the bad devil on the other shoulder saying don't. And those went back and forth, and he said ultimately the bad devil won out on the theory that the only person on planet Earth that knows that Pat Sajak just made a mistake is Pat Sajak. And if he puts him on, everyone's going to know. So he never put the president on. And he told that story. And then I asked him, well, Pat, I know it's been almost 50 years, but would you like to introduce the president of the United States giving that message? And he got so excited. He said, you have that tape? Well, it was incredibly difficult for us to find that tape. The Nixon Library didn't have it. The National Archives didn't have it. The Television News Archives at Vanderbilt University didn't have it. It was nowhere to be found. So I pretty much gave up. We're not going to find it. Then one day I got a call from an archivist at the Nixon Library, and he says, Mike, we've been looking in the wrong place. Nixon had pre-recorded that message to the troops. And that's why it didn't appear in the transcripts, and that's why it didn't appear in our search for Christmas address, because he had pre-recorded that a couple weeks prior. But anyway, make a long story short, he said, if you pay to digitize this, I will send you a copy, because it was still on its original reel-to-reel tape at the Nixon Library. So I paid for it. About a week later, I got a CD, and we have that Nixon address, and we're going to play it. And for Vietnam veterans who were listening, it will be the first time ever that they've heard it.
Better late than never, as I suppose
exactly.
They say.
Exactly. Yeah. And Pat did introduce it, by the way. He cleared his throat and did a nice introduction.
How much of the Armed Forces Vietnam Network material has survived over the year? Because most of the programming, I take it, was done live.
Surprisingly little is still around. We do have a show that Pat Sajak did in 1969, and we are going to air that. But surprisingly few. We ask everybody that worked at AFEN who agreed to do an interview with us, do you have any recordings of your material? And almost everybody said no. It just wasn't done. And the reason that Harry Simons said he has so many tapes is that he thought what he was doing was unique, and he wanted his family back in the States to know what it was he was up to. So he recorded periodically, not every day, of course. In fact, it's a very small percentage of his work, but he recorded periodically his shows on reel-to-reel tapes, and he would mail them home to his family, and his family would listen to it. Well, his sister saved all those tapes, and they've been saved in an air-conditioned, which in Florida is a big deal, air-conditioned, climate-controlled environment these things are pristine. The audio sounds like they were recorded 50 minutes ago, not 50 years ago.
Ladies and gentlemen, the beat goes on.
Good evening to you, 905 with your brother, Marine Sergeant Harry Simons, as we light the fires of I Corps from the American Forces Vietnam Network and the Doors.
You know that it would be untrue. You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you.
How many parts does the documentary have?
Well, it's going to be 10 hours long that will air from 4 to 6 p.m., October 26th through October 30th, and that 4 to 6 p.m., by the way, is Central Time, U.S. Central Time. It will then rerun in a 10-hour marathon on Veterans Day, which is Wednesday, November 11th, from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time. In that 10 hours, roughly half is going to be recordings of AFVN from the 60s and 70s. The other half will be interviews with Vietnam veterans. And about half of those are people who produce the shows that work for AFVN. The other half are veterans who listen in the field, and they tell some fascinating stories. Some are of absolute horror, and those are not being included, by the way. The bad stories we're not including, because every documentary about the war tells about the negative hell of war, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is telling the story, if there is such a thing, it's telling the story of the positive side of the war, the camaraderie, the brotherhood, the sound of home, the effort by dedicated personnel at AFVN to bring happiness to the people who were halfway around the world from home. And so we're telling that good story. But some of these veterans that we've interviewed did tell stories of heroism as well. And, you know, I'd be lying if I told you that my eyes remained dry as I produced this, because they didn't. I sat there with 70-year-old men, and we were both crying. And some of them were recalling horrible memories, and others were telling heroic tales. So it runs the spectrum. But in the documentary, we're telling the good part of the war, the good effort that was put forth that came over the air on American Forces Vietnam Network.
Is this the first time a documentary on American Forces Vietnam Network has ever aired in the United States?
To my knowledge, yes.
So what has been the reaction so far since the news came out that this was being produced?
It has been incredible. We heard from many veterans who got word while the production was going on. Some of them volunteered to be parts of it. Some of them just gave us encouragement. Others said, wow, this is great. I want to help publicize it. And so we've got that aspect of it. But once we publicized this and it really hit the media, as we got closer, obviously, to the October 26th debut of this program, word of this went around the world. And we have heard from many people, mostly AFVN veterans themselves, who have written or called and said, I worked at AFVN. In Pleiku, I was at AFVN in Quy Nhon. I'm really looking forward to hearing this. Or some other people, my father was stationed at AFVN in Hue or whatever. And they're telling these stories and just looking forward so much to hearing this documentary. And WEBY can be heard in four states, Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana. It's a huge station. But around the world, if people want to hear it, we are streaming this live on the internet, and people can listen at www.1330weby.com. And so these people that are writing and emailing and in some cases calling from all over the place, I give them that web address, and they say, I will absolutely listen to it. I'm going to get my dad to listen to it because this is the veteran. Response has been overwhelmingly positive.
Was your intent actually to produce 10 hours, or was it just a one-off, one-time program, and then you went, wait a second, there's a much bigger story here?
Well, it was the latter of the two. The original idea was to play Harry's tapes on the radio for an hour and then talk about it for an hour, and that would have been so simple. But the more I heard of these tapes, the more I realized, well, that needs to be heard too. Oh, well, we've got to include that part. Wow, we can't leave that out. And so it grew. And then we wanted to interview some of the people that produced it. So it grew from there. So it went from what would have been a simple, probably four-hour project into something that has taken Harry and I both literally thousands of hours of work to produce. And, you know, it's a labor of love, but it has been a huge effort. And we're not quite done with it. I've spent the last three nights sleeping on the couch in the lobby at the radio station because I finished somewhere between 3 and 5:30 in the morning, and I have to get back to it at 9 in the morning. So no sense driving home. And we're still not done. But it's going to be phenomenal when we're finished.
And here's to you, Mrs. Robinson. Jesus loves you more than you will know.
And I was speaking there to Mike Bates. If you want more information on the documentary and also to listen to it as all 10 hours go out, you can visit the website to the radio station at www.1330weby.com. Once again, www.1330weby.com. You are listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. We now turn our attention to propagation with our propagation editor, Glenn Hauser.
Keith from IPS in Australia, the global HF propagation forcast through October 24th. Normal at low latitudes, normal to fair at middle and high latitudes. Space weather South Africa calls for magnetic conditions to be unsettled until quiet on October 23rd. Shortwave fade-outs unlikely and MUF unstable through the 23rd. The space weather forecast summary from Met Office UK through October 25th. A 30% chance of moderate class solar flares. Geomagnetic activity generally quiet to unsettled. No earthbound CMEs are expected. From Peter Coleman of the Czech Propagation Interest Group, the geomagnetic field will be quiet on October 23rd to 26th. Mostly quiet October 27th. Quiet to unsettled October 28th to 30th, November 6th, 10th, and 11th. Quiet to active October 31st, November 1st, 7th, 8th, and 9th. Active to disturbed November 2nd to 5th. SWPC in Boulder says geomagnetic field activity is expected to be mostly quiet to unsettled through November 2nd, with isolated active levels possible October 29th. But from November 3rd to 14th, activity increasing to unsettled to minor to major G1 or G2 storm levels. Minor to major storm levels possible November 3rd to 5th, with A&K indices peaking at 50 and 6 on the 3rd. Also minor storm levels possible November 8th to 10th and 14th. The quietest dates of 5 and 2 will be October 23rd to 28th and October 31st to November 2nd. Solar flux dropping from 120 October 24th to 80 on November 2nd to 6th, and up to 120 again by November 14th. Bill Hepburn's VHF, UHF, microwave DX predictions. Strong to very strong tropospheric ducting all week along the northern coast of Chile and the southern coast of Brazil. Extreme ducting between Oman and India, along northwestern Australia and in the Gulf of Carpentaria, along the coast of Angola, Namibia, and by October 26th along the west coast of South Africa. From October 25th along Baja California Norte and Alta California Sur.
Thanks, Glenn, and that's all we have time for. 73 and 88 to the ladies.